We are listening to Al Green to get in the mood for this week's edition of Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Grab your fishing rod and tackle because we're talking about fishing. And the song, of course, is Take Me to the River. We have two guides to take your questions this hour. Call anytime, 800-642-1234. Kyle Von Rudin is an avid Mississippi angler, fish biologist with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Kyle, welcome to the Ideas Network. Good morning to you. We also have Justine Haas, who loves to fish our lakes and is Fisheries Bureau Director for the State Department of Natural Resources. Justine, welcome to you.
Good morning, Kate. Thanks for having me.
Well, the opening day was the second. Did opening day, Justine, look different this year due to the pandemic?
I think a lot of people stay closer to home, which is one of the things we've been advising for people to do and finding some new traditions and opportunities close to home. I live in the Northwoods of Wisconsin, and there were certainly plenty of people out using those lakes and fishing. So it's a little strange. To me, it kind of looked normal, but maybe where the people came from looked a little bit different.
Kyle, what did you see out there for opening day? What kind of traffic?
I can say the same thing. There's been quite a few people out in the river in boats, and you can tell there's a lot more families and younger people out, maybe more in the daytime. And this year, too, trout fishing has been booming quite a bit in the Coulee region by us. There's been a lot of people fishing out in the creeks. So.
Oh, I bet. Yeah. Are they catching some good trout?
I think so. I've just went a couple times myself, and the trout are pretty abundant, it seems like, in this area.
Justine, what's biting where you are?
Well, I wasn't on the water yesterday, but I was by a boat landing. Got to talk to some anglers, a couple families as they came off the lake, and the crappies were biting. We've had a cold week this past week, but we're going into a warm weekend, so we'd expect that the crappies and the bass and walleye will be cooperating this weekend.
Justine, does the DNR have any special restrictions on fishing or boating due to COVID-19? Is there anything there?
You know, we are still, telling people, try to stay close to home, try to fish with people, from within your household. Or if you're fishing with others, try to keep that social distance or take measures to protect yourself. Otherwise, there's really no change. Mostly our safety is about, being safe on the water, wearing your life jacket, being aware of your surroundings, et cetera. But so not too many changes for the anglers.
So, Kyle, you've been fishing the Mississippi. What are you seeing for water levels? Are they high?
No, actually, this year has been kind of nice. We've been acclimated to a new normal where the river's high all the time, but right now, the river's at 6.5 in La Crosse, which is almost lower than normal years. So it's actually a low water spring right now.
How does that affect anglers?
Well, the fish definitely move in different places. So on the river, you're generally used to adapting to it because it goes up and down all the time. But this time of year, the fish are trying to get out of the current a little bit to spawn, especially some of the panfish and bass and stuff like that. But you just got to get used to, finding slack current and stuff like that. So,
right. You can kind of navigate it. We're talking about fishing all hour on this edition of Wisconsin Weekend. We have two guides here, Kyle Von Rudin, a fish biologist with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Justine Haas is here, director of the DNR's Fisheries Bureau, and you as well. Tell us about your secrets. What are your tackle tips, favorite game fish, maybe favorite place to fish? You don't have to reveal too much about the best fishing spot. Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Justine, how are the conditions for fishing this year after Wisconsin's winter? We saw kind of up and down temperatures this spring.
Yeah, we did. And the ice conditions this past winter were quite interesting as well. But, depending on where you are, like Kyle said, their water levels are, you know, normal or a little bit below. Other parts of the state, they're sort of above normal. On the Great Lakes, like Lake Michigan, they're at some record highs. And so definitely make some changes to people's ability to fish and where they can go. And it, you have to think maybe a little harder from your traditional spot on your lake, because maybe the water level has made some changes there. But overall, from the health of the fisheries, you know, sometimes the water level can make some changes, like Kyle mentioned before. You know, when you have the fish need to spawn and they have certain habitat that they want to do that in, when we have changes in water level, that can change where that habitat is and how much habitat is out there. But overall, I would say, you know, the health of our fisheries are very good across the whole state. And we provide a real nice diversity of opportunities for people out there.
Well, let's take a call now. Kim is joining us from Eau Claire. I understand you're going fishing right now.
I am on the road to go to Lake Altoona right now. This would have been my 20th year in Canada, but because of COVID, I'm not going to Canada. So I've been fishing locally, which it's a little different than Canada. There's a lot bigger population of walleyes, and well, it's not open right now, it'll be this weekend, but lake trout and those things. But yes, I've been fishing and getting meals of walleye every week to eat for my wife and I. So.
That is great. Well, I hope you have a good time. Justine, do you have any tips?
You know, the biggest tip is just to have fun out there, right? And and stay safe on the water.
Kyle, what about you?
I haven't actually fished on Lake Altoona, but I know there's some crappies up there, so I think that'd be a choice I would look to.
Very good. Well, Kim, have a great weekend. John, you're joining us from Fond du Lac, and you're looking for some walleye, I understand.
Well, yeah, so good morning, and I was curious about if there's been any new research or insights into the natural reproduction of walleye in northern Wisconsin lakes.
John, great question. Justine, any new insights on walleye?
Sure, yes. We ourselves as the department are doing several studies with walleye, especially about the reproduction and the survival of the small walleye. We've seen some declines in the populations of the walleye in northern Wisconsin. We have multiple studies going on looking at interactions between walleye and bass, walleye habitat for spawning, and also we've been supplementing several fisheries with stocking of walleye, and we're using different rates of stocking, and we're evaluating what is the best rate of stocking to provide a quality walleye fishery for anglers where we're seeing reproduction issues. So we have a whole host of things going on in the department, and then outside of the department, we work with a lot of collaborators like the University of Wisconsin-Stevens Point, the University of Wisconsin in Madison, even, you know, we do talk to our neighbors in Minnesota, so we talk to those folks too. And, you know, we work together as a community, as biologists, and we're all working together because, you know, the Midwest is seeing some similar patterns. And so there's a lot of other studies going on. You know, we're really trying to focus to maintain those quality walleye fisheries.
We're talking fishing with Justine Haas and Kyle Von Ruden. Justine's with the Wisconsin DNR. Kyle, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, join in our conversation. Any point, where do you find the most bites? Do you prefer rivers or lakes? Why do you love to fish? We're at 800-642-1234. This is another version of Take Me to the River by the Talking Heads. Back for more Wisconsin Weekend in a moment. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. We're talking about fishing on this edition of Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We have U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service fish biologist Kyle Von Ruden and the DNR's Fisheries Bureau Director Justine Haas taking your questions. We all queued up music to set the mood. The song is Fishing in the Dark by the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band. Let's get to the chorus. Fishing in the dark, lying on our backs and counting the stars where the cool grass grows. Down by the river in the full moonlight, we'll be falling in love in the middle of the night, just moving slow. I have not heard that for a while. Are you an angler? Do you fish recreationally or commercially? What do you love to catch? What bait do you use? We're at 800-642-1234. Let's take another call now. Gary is with us from Boscobel. Hi, Gary.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a question about the nationally recognized quality of the trout fishing in the Driftless region. And I just have a report here from the Crawford County Stewardship Project after 10 years of study that the amount of total phosphorus and the amount of E. coli in our trout streams since 2017 has skyrocketed. And it's in part because of our karst topography and also because of confinement feed operations increasing in number here. And I'm wondering whether this kind of pollution is going to damage our water quality in our trout streams. And it seems in the report that the Republican lawmakers are pushing stronger and stronger against local control of our surface waters or any of our other resources.
Well, let's get Justine to jump in here. What does runoff do to our trout streams and basically any of our freshwater areas?
Sure, runoff can have all kinds of impacts on our freshwater resources. Like the gentleman said, you know, phosphorus levels, nitrogen levels, those types of things can increase the productivity of the water, that increases things like algae blooms, and can have impacts then on the fisheries. We do a lot of work both in the fisheries program and our water quality program at the department, monitoring the quality of the water for the fisheries and the aquatic plants and the mussels and the invertebrates, all the types of critters that live in our water bodies, to really monitor that. The gentleman's concern was, with the changes in the areas in the Driftless, water quality impact those fisheries. You know, I don't think we have an answer as to the severity of the changes yet. We definitely monitor water quality on a regular basis on some what we call trend streams. We have a lot of historical data, both of the fish population levels and those water quality metrics. And so it's definitely something we are watching as an agency across the whole state. And, you know, address it as we can in the Driftless area in particular. We do a lot of habitat work along our trout streams. We work very closely with our farmers and our partners in those areas to make modifications to agricultural practices along our cold water streams to protect those fisheries from different kinds of runoff or activities on farmland. And we have a lot of cooperators working with us to make sure that we still have these quality fisheries.
Kyle, what metrics are you monitoring on runoff, and what do you see in terms of your studies?
Sure. Well, actually, at the Fish and Wildlife, we have a program called the Fishers and Farmers Partnership, and it's a farmer-driven, like, soil health and watershed initiative. So we have people that go out and talk with different farmers about, you know, grazing, crop stripping, putting in cover crops, and then stream bank stabilization. So all around it's for the watershed, and it benefits fish, you know, farmers and people. So that's one of the programs we have going on.
How long has that program been in the works?
Actually, they're just celebrating their 10-year anniversary right now. It's just 10 years. So,
do you find that there's better communication with farmers and that you're able to work together, you know, at the same table when you have that communication?
I think so. There's a lot of farmers that are happy to do this, too, because, you know, it benefits their land as well. So if they can, you know, stabilize their stream banks, they don't lose much crop field to that, and it benefits everybody.
We're talking about fishing this hour on this edition of Wisconsin Weekend. We have our guides, Kyle von Ruden, who is a fish biologist with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Justine Haas is here, director of the DNR's Fisheries Bureau. You can jump in at any point. Are you someone who's been fishing for decades? How did you learn? Was it about the sport you love? Do you try to introduce fishing to others? Join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Justine, I just love your story about how you got into fishing and that, you know, it wasn't until you moved to Wisconsin that you actually learned to fish and you passed this tradition to your own father. Can you tell us about that journey?
Sure, yes. I am originally from England, so if I sound funny sometimes, I just blame it on that accent. But I did not fish growing up in England. I moved to Wisconsin in my early 20s to do a master's degree at Stevens Point, and the people around me all were fishing, and they took me out fishing, and I just fell in love with the activity. And so when my dad was here a few years ago, he had never been fishing. He's in his 70s. And so for his birthday, we bought him a fishing license. And actually, it was my dad and my uncle. And we took them out fishing, bluegill fishing. And it was such a fun activity for me to share that and teach my parent an activity that he thought he would never do. And to this day, whenever we talk or whenever I go home to England, there's a lot of conversation about those fish. And he picked up the tradition of a fisherman pretty easy because the fish are getting bigger and bigger every time I hear his story. So it's very exciting to have had that opportunity to take him to do that activity, something he otherwise would never have experienced in his life.
Kyle, how did you learn to fish? Who taught you?
I would have to say I grew up in a pretty big fishing family. So my dad and grandpa and everybody probably taught me how to fish before I could walk. So I've been on the river quite a bit and grew up in the Coulee region, some of the local lakes, but I tend to bass fish quite a bit in the summer. And actually one thing I remember that got me into that was when I was probably about 10 years old, we went out to one of the local lakes and we were bluegill and crappie fishing. And on the way, we stopped at a bait shop, and I bought my first actual artificial lure. And it was a Rapala shad wrap, and I was throwing it out. And on my third cast, I ended up catching a 20-inch largemouth bass, and that was a pretty big deal. I brought in a ball of weeds with it, so we didn't think I had anything until we got to the boat. But
I'm sure that changed your trajectory on fishing after that. You thought, like, yeah, if this is what it takes, I can do this, right? Sign me up.
Yeah, that was fun.
And Justine, you know, getting into fishing, you've said that it doesn't take a lot of money, that you don't need a lot of resources in order to be able to cast a line. And I'm thinking about the times we're living in and how real that could be right now.
Yes, it's actually interesting. You know, a fishing pole, you can buy a fishing pole for $20. You can buy one for $200, right? But they still catch fish. It doesn't matter necessarily how much you pay on the fishing rod. So it's an activity that's relatively cheap. If you're under 16, you don't need a license. Those over 16 do need a license. If it's your first time, we have a $5 fee if you've never bought a license before. And we've been looking at some numbers of the license sales here in March and April, and we have definitely seen an uptick in the sales of licenses, and we've also seen an uptick in those first-time license buyers. And the average age of the license buyer is down right now. And so I think young people are really looking at this as an activity to do with their family. It maybe looks a little different, too. There's a lot of people who want to fish for the food, so they know where their food comes and they're putting it on their table. And so it's exciting to see a new generation of people coming into this activity and having that opportunity. And we definitely saw a lot more trout anglers this spring, too, like Kyle said before. So a lot of people taking the opportunity and a lot of new people taking the opportunity because it is an affordable activity. You don't need a boat. There's a lot of shore fishing sites. So there's a lot of access to this activity.
And Kyle, are the fish we catch safe to eat?
Oh, absolutely. You always got to look at, you know, where you're at. There might be certain lakes that have some kind of restrictions, but that's always a local thing you want to look at. But generally speaking, in Wisconsin, we have pretty good water quality. So I would say, yeah.
And in terms of bag limits, can you explain to us what bag limits are and, you know, what are some limits that we can have on our catches?
Sure. Well, speaking on the Mississippi River, a daily bag limit is how many fish you can keep in your possession on a single day. And actually this year, people want to look at their Wisconsin regulations because on the river there has been some changes to the different species for how many you can keep. So, for instance, the panfish, like bluegills, crappies, and perch, it used to be a limit of 25 for each species. And this year they lowered it to 15 fish for each species. And there's also some slightly different restrictions on walleye, northern bass, flathead catfish, also on the river. Or not bass, but on the Mississippi this year.
So pay attention to those numbers. They're moving a little bit. U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service fish biologist Kyle Von Ruden, Justine Haas here, DNR Fisheries Bureau Director. You can join in 800-642-1234. Our conversation continues going to the news with Catfish Boogie by Tennessee Ernie Ford on the Ideas Network. On the bank of the creek, don't make no noise, don't even speak. She threaded a worm right on that hook and dropped it in the water in a shady nook. We're fishing on Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and we want to hear about why you love to fish. Maybe you're thinking about casting a line for the very first time. All ages welcome on this. And there is music this hour to set the scene. Here's Doc Watson with Deep River Blues.
Let it rain, let it pour, let it rain a whole lot more, 'cause I got them Deep River Blues. Let the rain drive right on, let the waves sweep along, 'cause I got them Deep River Blues.
Are you feeling blue about your attempts at fishing? What are you trying to catch? What questions do you have for a fish biologist and the DNR's Fisheries Bureau Director? Any tips that you're learning? Join in 800-642-1234. We have the DNR's Justine Haas and Kyle Von Ruden from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. So, Kyle, we were talking about bag limits there. Why do you impose limits on how many fish you can keep and the size of those fish?
It's really just trying to keep the fish populations in check to make sure, you know, we're not declining in a certain species and try to keep stuff balanced. So,
and why do you change your limits each year? Why do you change those numbers?
Generally, it's not that often that they're changed. It's not like a annual thing, but like on the Mississippi River, I'm not sure how many years it's been, but it's been the same limits for, I would imagine, you know, 20 years or so. They just finally looked back at them and had some surveys and went through some of their scientific data and decided to change some of that a little bit.
Justine, let's talk about stocking fish. What kind of fish stocking does your agency do here in Wisconsin?
We do quite a bit of stocking. We stock fish into the Great Lakes, streams and lakes. And so in the Great Lakes, we're mostly focused on salmon and trout species. Inland waters in our lakes, we stock walleye and muskie. We also are one of the few states that raise lake sturgeon and are stocking them around our state as well. We provide them to other agencies like the Fish and Wildlife Service to stock in other states to rehabilitate populations. And then in our trout streams, we stock rainbow trout, brook trout, and brown trout. So we raise a lot of fish, and this past spring, we stocked out about 3 million fish across the state.
Wow, that's a lot of fish. Let's take a call. Russ is with us from Stoughton. Hi, Russ.
Hi, good morning. Great topic. I had two questions. I've lived in Stoughton, Wisconsin, just outside of Madison in Dane County for about 14 years. And while I read many articles about the bigger lakes, like Monona and all those getting stocking programs every year, I have never heard of one pertaining to Lake Tagansa. And the other question is, I see several years ago it was all posted to clean the weeds off your boat and trailer. to avoid the invasive species traveling from lake to lake. But without a hose and a spigot, I'm wondering how exactly are you supposed to do that?
All right, Russ, thank you for those questions. Justine, starting out with stocking on Lake Kiganza.
Yes, unfortunately, I don't have the answer whether that's part of our rotation for stocking. Basically, when we stock a fishery, we've done a survey and we're looking at the health of that overall fishery. You know, the majority of our fisheries in the States, the fish populations are healthy enough, are reproducing successfully and can support themselves. So we only are stocking in locations where we're not seeing that successful reproduction and population growth. So I would have to get back to you on that one. You can certainly reach out to us at the DNR and the local biologist can let you know about the history on that lake.
Russ, thank you. And Kyle, what about keeping those invasive plants, those weeds, off our boats? What is the best way to do that, especially if you don't have access to some water to hose it off?
Sure. Yeah, it's very important. And I know there are some launches now that are starting to install some type of a pressure sprayer or things like that that boat users can use. But I have seen people, and some of the best ways to do it is to carry with maybe a rake, or even if you have a broken fishing pole with, and that way you got something long that you can get under your trailer and hook the weeds and pull them off. It tends to make it a little bit easier. So,
all right. So you kind of use what you have to pull those weeds off. How important is it to be able to check for those invasive species when you get out of the off the water?
Yeah, people should be doing it every time, because if you're going from water body to water body, zebra mussels, you know, they've been a thing too that has went to different lakes now by, you know, boat users. So we always want to check for aquatic nuisance plants, zebra mussels, anything like that. But you should be doing it every time. So,
Justine, what about nuisance fish? What should be done with invasive fish if they're caught?
So yeah, we have a few places where we have some invasive fish. It is, maybe I'll just use Lake Winnebago as an example. We found not within Lake Winnebago, we did not find the round goby, but one dam away, we found the round goby, which is an invasive species. And so people are not allowed, they can keep one and bring it into a DNR office for identification, or send photographs to our DNR biologist for identification. If it's showing up in a no location, then we will go out and we will survey to try and determine how established those are. The one key is to not transport fish around. We have a rule that the fish have to be dead when you transport them off a lake. And that is not only to prevent the fish from being moved, but also disease. We have a disease in Wisconsin called viral hemorrhagic septicemia, which can actually be in the fish and in water. And so we had a lot of change to rules about moving live fish to both prevent the movement of invasives and that disease in the mid-2000s.
Kyle, you look at invasive species, looking a lot at carp. What concerns do you have there?
Well, getting back to the last question, too, if anybody does find, you know, Asian carp when they're out boating, if they can contact a local DNR and keep it fresh and not frozen, and then we can get it and do some of our morphometrics on it and check for different data on them. But, with the Asian carp, it's definitely an invasive species that are of concern. There's a silver, a big head carp, and black carp and grass carp are the four species that we talk about. And silver and big head get a lot more of the, they get looked at a lot more. But silver carp are the ones that can, you know, you've seen videos where they jump out of the water, 4 to 8 feet tall or high. They can be a little injurious if you're, driving down, to the river and boating. But then grass carp are one that also, they have been stocked in some states, as a triploid fish, so they can sterilize them, and some states have been able to use them for like pond aquaculture. But their biggest thing is that they eat, a lot of grass and plants and stuff like that, and that's what they've been used for. But, those type of fish we definitely, want to keep out, so.
We're spending the hour on fishing on this edition of Wisconsin Weekend. Our guides there, Kyle von Ruden, a fish biologist with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and Justine Haas here, director of the DNR's Fisheries Bureau. You can join in. Do you manage or work at a state fishery? Where is it? What kind of fish can anglers catch there? Has your fish population changed at all recently? How are fish habitats? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Justine, looking at fish habitats, what are some other ways, strategies to improve fish populations that may not involve just stocking more fish?
Yes, a lot to do with the success of our fish populations is having quality habitat in the different waters. And they need different fish need different habitat, and they need different habitat for the different life stages. And so, you know, we have lakes that, you know, our natural lakes are really, you know, they have natural habitat, and the fish that are in there have become in there because of that habitat. And so one of our goals is to protect that. So there's a lot of education to landowners around lakes about why it's important not to change the structure of that habitat. We do a lot of work in our lakes in putting in trees. Trees are great habitat off of the shoreline for multiple different fish species. A walleye, for example, needs a certain size rock in shallow water to lay its eggs on. So when we're looking at habitat, you know, we're looking at the location that we're at. We do a lot of trout habitat work in our state, too. We talked a little earlier about the driftless area, but we also do it all the way across the state. A lot of bank stabilization, creating pools for the trout to have refuge in as we see water temperatures change with climate change. And so we do a lot of survey work to count the number of fish. But on top of that, we actually really look and see what the habitat is like. And if we see that we're having issues with the habitat, then we're going to go in and try and address that.
Kyle, what ecological challenges are there as you look at climate change and the game fish populations?
I guess right now, you know, we've been seeing some of these 100-year floods. So, like Justine was talking about, some of the bank stabilization is one of the tools. But and for us at the Fish and Wildlife, we have a program called the Fish Passage Program, and it helps out with reconnecting streams and rivers from old barriers. And with these big floods, you know, there's a lot of culverts in some of the roads, and a lot of these culverts are undersized. So this program will go and look at some of those areas and, you know, replace some of the culverts with a better design so that the fish can move past through. And then when these high water events come, then it doesn't, you know, blow out the road and cause more damage to the habitat. So that program is been good for reestablishing, you know, healthy fish populations and helping fish migrate for spawning and such too.
Kyle von Ruden from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, Justine Haas here from the state DNR, their fishing guides. Are you planning to fish this weekend? Are you going for bass or walleye, maybe some perch? Will you share your favorite fishing hole? What are your tips? Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. This is Fish and Blues by Taj Mahal. Back in a moment on the Ideas Network.
Maybe going fishing too. Bet your life. Wife's gonna catch more fish than you. Many fish bites if you got. I was fishing, he was fishing, we were kissing. I was getting madder than a hornet in an old Coke can. Getting closer,
madder than a hornet in an old Coke can. It is Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer Kent. That song is Shut Up and Fish by Maddie and Tay. The song is about a city boy getting fresh with a storyteller who basically says, knock it off, guy, I'm trying to fish over here. Still time to join in. What do you want to know about bluegill, crappie, trout, walleye, and other fish? Are you listening from a lake right now? What's biting? 800-642-1234. Kyle von Ruden here, Justine Haas. They're from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the state DNR. Let's take another call now. John is joining us from Door County this morning. Hi, John.
Hey, good morning, everybody. How's it going?
Going well. Where are you headed?
Well, I'm working down in the Madison area, but I operate a charter fishing service up in Door County. And first of all, I want to say that all of us up there in the charter fishing industry really appreciate the hard work that the DNR does. because a lot of the fish that we go after are stocked. Natural reproduction is increasing, which is great, but it also is greatly supplemented by the stocking and the rearing effort that the DNR does. That being said, the past few years, the numbers have been down a little bit, which isn't a big deal because that in turn gives us a lot bigger fish. We've caught king salmon in the 30-pound range the last few years, which we haven't done in the 7 or 8 years before that. And well, this year, they have increased the stocking, which will give us a great mix of numbers of fish and size of fish. So great props to the DNR. They do an amazing job.
Oh, John, thank you so much for calling in. Justine, that must be really good to hear that.
It is. We have there's a lot of people involved in the Lake Michigan fishery, members of the charter fishing industry, you know, all our different stakeholders, you know, and then within our program, you know, our hatchery system, our biologists that work on collecting the information to make sure that, you know, there's enough food out there for these fish to eat. There's a lot of people involved in making that fishery a success, and we're very proud of how successful that fishery is. And it's nice to hear that people enjoy it and are appreciative of the efforts to get those fish out there.
Well, Kyle, do you have any tips on catching a large or smallmouth bass?
Sure. I guess this time of year, like I said, they generally spawn when the water temperature reaches about 60 to 65 degrees. And with the sun we're having today, too, the fish like to get in some shallow water. So my advice to somebody who's going out today, I would probably fish in a shallower, weedy area if you can find where some of the trees lay down, because smallmouth bass, they like to spawn under, lumber and, like, dead trees hanging in the water. And the largemouth will generally make beds in shallow, weedy areas. So with all the sun we're having, I would definitely fish in the shallow water because that warms up fastest, especially with the vegetation.
Well, that sounds like a really good tip. And let's go to Carl now in Marinette. Hi, Carl.
Good morning, ma'am. Yes, I'm driving right now. I'm driving to Marinette. We're going to fish walleye in the Milan River. Over the years, well, I fish a lot of smallmouth bass, with the temperature fluctuating, they were in Little Sturgeon and Pottawatomie Park, but they moved out. Assuming they'll move back in when the water warms up. But my question is, when in the spring of the year, in the northern lakes, when they warm up and they cool off, and they warm up and they cool off, and the fish move back and forth as the temperature fluctuates. I've caught smallmouth bass in northern Wisconsin, north of Leona and Trenton, like June and July, and the spawn seems to be really small, and the fish seems like if the water never warms up again, the fish never spawn.
Carl, we're short on time. Kyle, could you field that in just a few moments here?
Sure. I guess we have seen that with like bluegills too, where sometimes if they don't have ideal conditions when they move up to spawn, and then we have a big stretch of cold weather, they can move off the beds. And some fish like that might eventually hold on to their eggs and they might not ever put them out that year. And then other times a fish like that, a bluegill, could spawn twice in a year. They could spawn later in the summer again if they have better conditions. So,
well, thank you both so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Justine Haas, Fisheries Bureau Director for the State Department of Natural Resources. Kyle Von Ruden, fish biologist with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Now it is time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a look at zoo animals.
The coronavirus pandemic has truly touched every aspect of Wisconsin life. On beautiful spring days, zoos would normally be crowded with visitors. Although they're quiet now, staff say the animals will be ready whenever Wisconsinites can return. In the meantime, WPR's Megan Hart tells us zoos are hoping to bring a bit of joy to people however they can.
That's the sound of my morning commute from the bedroom to the kitchen. No, I'm not quarantining at a South African lodge, but I have gotten in the habit of starting my day by live streaming a safari.
He's going to lead us right to the pride.
I'm actually on my own in Green Bay. I've been spending lots of time searching for birds on the trails near my apartment. And like so many others, I've been enjoying viral videos of animals like the wild goats that went marauding through an empty English village. I think we've seen in recent weeks that animals can bring lots of joy to people during times of uncertainty. And despite the stay-at-home order, Wisconsin zoos are doing their part to keep us entertained. Angela Kosky manages social media for the new zoo in Suamico. She says followers have particularly connected with the zoo's black-footed ferrets during this time of self-isolation.
There's this thing called dead ferret sleep, which is actually a real thing. You can Google it. Basically, when they fall asleep, like, they sleep hard. They fall asleep wherever they are. So our ferrets have this habit of, like, folding themselves in super odd angles and just passing out.
I could see why that tracks with people stuck inside. Kosky says the new zoo's aim is to put humans in touch with animals, whether in person or online.
Our hope is that by teaching people a little bit about them, getting people to, you know, appreciate them or feel connected with them, ultimately that, you know, helps them want to make a difference.
A few weeks ago, the zoo shared a photo of a sign someone had posted outside, thanking the keepers, who are considered essential workers. Kosky says the animals are still receiving top-notch care, but it's not an easy time for zoos around the state. If the new zoo is closed for a couple months during peak season, it could lose half its revenue for the year.
We were on track for probably the best first quarter we've had in years as far as attendance and revenue, and that evaporated very quickly.
That's Chuck Wickenhauser, director of the Milwaukee County Zoo. He hopes the zoo will soon reopen in some capacity as stay-at-home restrictions ease. But in the meantime, fans can still see what's going on with their favorite animals on social media.
Come on in. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Milwaukee County Zoo. I'm Joe.
Don Fleischhaus cares for the zoo's North American animals.
We have four seals, a polar bear, four grizzly bears, a brown bear, five elk, three caribou, two swans, two cranes, two prairie dogs, a badger, and a moose.
She says keepers are still feeding, weighing, and cleaning up after the animals as normal, just without some of the extra meetings.
Basically, we just are focusing on our animals, which is kind of nice.
Lots of the animals Fleischhaus works with have recently come out of hibernation, so they haven't necessarily noticed that things aren't quite normal these days. The polar bear is an exception.
She gets access to all of her holding areas, and she can go in the dens or the back or the exhibit, wherever she wants to go, and she seems a little bit confused.
Fleischhaus and Wickenhausen say the great apes, otters, and a trumpeter swan with an affinity for humans also seem to have figured out something is up. But not all zoos are empty of guests. Shalom Wildlife Zoo in West Bend operates more like a safari park than a traditional zoo. It usually closes from New Year's Day to late April, but it reopened early this year in response to the coronavirus shutdown. Owner David Fechter says it wasn't even his idea.
We started receiving hundreds of phone calls and emails asking us if, you know, people were needing a mental break. People were begging us if we could open up the drive-through.
On weekends, the line to drive through the zoo has been more than an hour long. Fechter says he knows this is a difficult time for many people, but he also sees a silver lining.
Just such a wonderful thing, you know, how the families are tuning back into each other and tuning into nature. And, you know, how can you go wrong there?
WPR's Megan Hart brought us that story. She's a reporter based in Green Bay. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook. I'm Maureen McCollum.
Wisconsin Life is part of our weekly edition of Wisconsin Weekend here on The Morning Show. We want to know how you're spending your weekends. Send your suggestions for Wisconsin Weekend to ideas at WPR.org. That's ideas at WPR.org, and we'll explore it for a future program. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.